Uncle Laser here. America's built on fast cars, fast food, and even faster women. Photo Casino's built in America. You know what they're fast at? Fast cash prize redemption. You see, the only moto is U.S. owned and operated. Moto. It's American made. That's who we are, and that's who we care about. Play for free at Moto.us.
Moto Casinos, the social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Hello and welcome back to Epochs. This week I shall be continuing my story of Henry V, the reign and achievements of Henry V. Apologies for the interregnum there, talking about Lawrence of Arabia for a few weeks. So back to the story of Henry V. So I'm going to continue the story of Henry V's reign before he goes to France for the Agincourt campaign. And it's a period of about a year, a bit more than a year. But all sorts of things happen in that time. So let's go through that period and hopefully we can get up to the French campaign and Harfleur and all that sort of thing. But quite a few different things go on. So I should continue reading from Anne Curry's book, Henry V, Playboy Prince to Warrior King, because as I said before, I feel like out of all the books I've read, which is quite a few to be honest, I feel like she covers this period the best. Probably won't use her all that much for the actual military campaigning stuff, but again, for this period, she's very good. So she starts talking about here just the financial side of things, because that's a big part of the story. You know, it's very expensive to have foreign wars. And medieval kings, their relationship with Parliament, where they get given money, essentially, or get given oversight over levying taxes. That relationship is really important. And Henry V's father, Bolingbroke, Henry IV, had a bad relationship with his parliaments, basically. They kind of never really trusted him, or he'd asked them for too much, or he'd made promises often that he'd do things in return for monies, and then didn't do them, or any did them in a half-assed sort of a way. So his relationship with parliaments and therefore money was always strained. And so Henry V decides to do it a bit differently. Or Henry IV always overspent as well. So Anne Curry says this, quote, "Mindful of the financial problems that dogged his father's reign, Henry kept the size and costs of his household low, nor did his reign see the frequent chopping and changing in office holding which his father had witnessed. A lower turnover indicated a king who was sure of his judgment and clear in his intentions. Conscious of the criticism his father had attracted for promoting men of low rank, Henry was keen to have leading nobles and clergy as the core of his council. The militarism of his reign, generated by the wars with France, assisted in bringing peers and leading knights into the king's inner circle." End quote. So that's the thing, if you remember, if you go back to, there's various other kings that have been unpopular. I think of Edward II particularly, or maybe Richard II as well, would have people very, very close to him in his inner entourage, in his inner circle of power, who weren't necessarily all that aristocratic or rich or landed or powerful. And the rich and landed, powerful, aristocratic people don't like that. They feel like they're being cheated out of something. I mean, in a way they are. Power usually is sort of a zero-sum game. If someone else has got a bit of power, it's just a slice of the cake that you haven't got. So anyway, Henry IV was guilty of that a bit, and Henry V had seen that and decided to go the other way with it, make sure he placates the rich and powerful people. It's not a terrible strategy in the early 15th century. Curry continues, quote, "Henry was a hands-on monarch, anxious to make his mark in all areas of business, especially in ensuring good justice, public order, and financial probity, and in promoting England's standing in Europe. But it was a mark of a good king to take counsel, both from regular royal council, as well as from great councils and parliament. 3 days after he was crowned, in a sign of his return from the political wilderness to which he had been relegated before his accession, he arranged an unprecedented personal meeting with the nobles and knights, at which he promised to rule for the honour of God and the prosperity of the realm. Those present in turn swore oaths of allegiance to him as king. By this ceremony, he sought to expunge any lingering doubts on his inheritance in the light of his alleged attempted coup and his father's apparent preference for his brother Thomas. As a public gesture, and demonstrating his adherence to expected royal practice at a new accession, the king indicated his intention to issue a general pardon, having messengers sent out on the day of his coronation to proclaim it. These actions publicised his good intentions, but the political nation still needed time to discover what kind of king he would be. So there you can see Henry is still kind of obviously feels he needs to shore up his position as king in all sorts of ways. For, you know, his father was a usurper, plain and simple. Well, a regicide as well. And then there was that, if you remember back, there was that interesting period where our Henry, Henry V, may have tried to usurp power from his father, Henry IV, briefly. Or during the period of 1410 into 1411, there was a strange struggle for power there, which is kind of a blot on his record, in a way. And he needs to, he obviously feels like the not just his reign, but the whole dynasty needs to be shored up in various ways. One of which is dealing with you know, openly the death of Richard, trying to come to terms with and drawing a line under the fact that he was dethroned and murdered, or at least died in suspicious circumstances. Anne Curry continues here saying, a few weeks after his accession, he had publicly announced that Richard II would receive a royal burial in Westminster Abbey, because he'd been buried somewhere else and all kings really should be buried in Westminster Abbey. You know, the death of Richard had tried to be swept under the carpet, basically. And instead of just keeping it that way, sort of never mentioning him ever again, Henry V decides to do something about it, try and put the record straight if he can. And in early December, he fulfilled the promise. It was an astute move in bringing Richard's body to Westminster from its initial burial place at the Dominican Friary at King's Langley, and what is more, reburying him in the tomb that Richard had previously reserved for himself. The king aimed, unsuccessfully as it turned out, both to quash rumours circulating for over a decade that Richard was still alive and living in Scotland. It also gave Henry the chance to pay his respects publicly to a king who had behaved honourably towards him in Ireland until his father's invasion. Remember, Henry had actually known Richard, had grown up with him as king, and, you know, went on that campaign with him in Ireland when everything went down. So it wasn't like Richard was this abstract figure from the past that he'd never known. No, he'd actually known him. Henry V even borrowed the banners used for his own father's burial in June at Canterbury Cathedral, underscoring the new king's keenness to draw the line under past conflicts, while at the same time emphasising the legitimacy and magnificence of his dynastic forebears, and thereby himself. His father's funeral was itself a spectacular event, the king ordering 90 flags bearing the arms of all Christian kings and other leading men, and 50 with the images of heroes as a sign of Henry IV's place in the panoply of famous men. The candles at the vigil and ceremony cost the king £100, which is loads, with a further £160 being expended on a single item, a golden bejewelled head to be given as an offering to the shrine of Thomas Becket. It's great that we've got details like this from the royal rolls. We know what they spent money on, and great little details which we don't often get much before this. Henry's reverence for his dead father is also witnessed in his cherishing of the latter's breviary and great Bible. Although he subsequently lent the latter to his Brigantine Foundation at Sheen, he made clear in his last will that it should be returned at his death to his royal successor. In May 1413, with the same mixture of personal devotion and dynastic publicity, he had commissioned a new effigy for his mother's tomb in Leicester, with, quote, divers arms of the King of England, quote, even though she had died 5 years before her husband seized the throne. He also made other gestures of reconciliation early in his reign, releasing from house arrest Edmund, Earl of March, a possible rival claimant to the throne, given his descent from the second son of Edward III. By the authority of Parliament, the Earl was given full control of his estates on the 9th of June, 1413, end quote. Now that's an important move, because the Earls of March really have got a better claim than the House of Lancaster to be the kings, to be the monarchs, to be the King of England. As if you remember, going back to Edward III and the whole John of Gaunt thing, the Black Prince and the second son, Lionel of Antwerp. Yet the Earls of March, even if it did pass through a woman at one point, they're really the true inheritors of the throne. of England, to be fair. So, I mean, Henry IV knew this, and that's why he'd locked up that this Edmund, Earl of March. So for Henry V to not only just release him from prison, but give him his estates back, it's quite a bold move, really. It shows that he's quite confident. I think he does. Many medieval monarch or pre-modern monarch might have easily decided to keep Edmund, Earl of March, in prison, or even kill him. Even hundreds of years after this, during the age of Henry VIII, for example, he was going around killing people with far less claim than Edward, Earl of March, has in comparison to Henry V. So for Henry V to release him and give him all his, essentially, money and land and power back, you know, it's an interesting move, isn't it? Whether it was a case of genuine confidence or whether it was almost like daring Edmund, Earl of March, to do something. It was probably the former of those two things. I feel like Henry V was just quite bold in the political and military moves he makes and was quite confident in his position. Just didn't think that, and correctly in this case, didn't think Edmund would do anything.
If you would like to see the full version of this premium video, please head over to lotuseaters.com and subscribe to gain full access to all of our premium content.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited, no purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.